Hello, friends. Welcome back to Spark My Muse. I am your host, Lisa Colon-Delay. Today is Soul School Lesson 307, Measuring Infinity Through Embodiment. Today I'm going to read to you from Image Journal, imagejournal.org. This particular article is called Gego's Hands Valuing the Body in Art by James K.A. Smith in issue 118, the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum in New York City. Is a very beautiful building, but might be one of the worst places to actually view art because there is a spiral ramp that moves upward where you can look at artwork on the wall, but it puts you always at a slant when you're viewing the art. Nevertheless, there are some extraordinary works of art there, and this article begins by speaking about how that museum came to happen. Smith writes, "The museum that bears Solomon R. Guggenheim's name was the vision of a little-known painter named Hille von Rebe. While painting his portrait in 1928, Rebe convinced Guggenheim to collect abstract art and then eventually to build a museum to house it. Except she didn't describe the building as a museum. Instead, she imagined it as, quote, a temple of non-representation and reverence. The spiritual language was intentional. For Rebe, art was a portal to a higher plane of consciousness. Given this spiritualist impulse, Frank Lloyd Wright was the obvious commission, and when he convened the fabled ramp that spirals up the rotunda, climbing towards the light of the oculus at the top, he was realizing a dream of Rebe's. Her conviction, as Julia Voss summarizes, quote, that non-objective painting could free the viewer from the material plane and lead to higher forms of consciousness, unquote. Fittingly, this place has been the site of generation-defining exhibits that in particular have reframed and revivified the work of the 20th century women whose ambitions and accomplishments resonate with Wright's. The 2017 Agnes Martin retrospective comes to mind, as well as the 2019 Hilma of Klint show, after which her intensely spiritual abstractions exploded into public consciousness a century late. This summer I experienced another one of these monumental shows, Gego, Measuring Infinity. Born Gertrude Goldschmidt, Gego escaped Hitler's Germany in 1939 for Venezuela, an adopted home the Jewish refugee never left. Drawing on her technical education, she worked as a freelance architect in Caracas for a decade before venturing into a life of art marking. The Guggenheim exhibit gathers her earliest work from the 50s through her latest creations of the early 1990s. Gego is best known for uncanny works in wire and steel that are somehow at once mechanistic and organic. We sense something geometric, but a refusal to follow Euclid's rules. Gego is working with her own geometry. She is, in a way, drawing lines in three dimensions. Empty space is integral to these creations, as any shape created by the forms. Much of the work is suspended from the ceiling, and gravity becomes a co-creator, the artist dancing with the constraint that makes things possible. I found myself absorbed in the shadows cast by these creations. Sketches in wire that mimic paintings. Gego has not merely drawn lines in wire on a wall, she has suspended them out from the wall, imbuing the space between wall and object with creative possibility. Subject to natural light, that in-between space creates the shadow that, over the course of a day, becomes the movement in this stationary work. Shadow is now experienced not as absence of light, but as the artwork's imprint on the world in a dance with the sun. Here, shadow is an active presence. Gego's dibujos sin papel frame nothing and project shadows, and yet both feel imbued with a fullness and presence. Her lines are like weather vanes that catch invisible winds. While Gego's work changes, Her project was consistent, quote, to work with emptiness, unquote, as she later wrote. Whether in her sculptures, she resisted that term, or watercolors or weavings, Gego played with the magic of line and space, visibility and invisibility. To work with emptiness is not nihilism. It is a mystical posture that appreciates the pregnancy of air and the fecundancy of silence. This is art in an apophatic mode, where negation is in service of a plentitude beyond naming. The empty space makes room for the ineffable that can only be felt. Within these frames, emptiness becomes its own mysterious presence. As you move up the rotunda's ramp, you traverse Gego's life, ascending toward the end. As you climb, Gego is aging. The bold, ambitious works in iron and steel from the 1960s and 70s give way in the 1980s to her smaller but remarkable Debojos sin Papel and deft, delicate watercolors that also play with absence. Her latest works, Tejederas, Weavings, abandon steel and wire altogether for textiles, paper, remnants of photographs, and scraps at hand in her studio, woven together in what Tanya Barson calls an aesthetics of the residual. I realized upon reflection that each stage of this career is a measure of what Gego's hands could do. Her ambition to, quote, measure infinity and plumb the resonant depths of nothingness never changes, only what she can lay her hands on and manipulate. For her whole life, Catherine Dayzelger observes, Gego's hands do the thinking. In this final Tejederas, portable forms of weaving that echo indigenous handcraft suggest that we can see, quote, not only the fragility of the aging body, but also the precariousness of exile, unquote. The elder Gego can no longer build monumental works like her early work, called Reticularia, in the vast architectural spaces, works that required her to bend heavy gauge wire and weld iron. But her hands can still weave lighter materials whose warp and weft plays with color and light, presence and absence, nothingness and the geometry of wonder. As Images editor-in-chief, I have over the past several years been inspired by the occasional criticism of the visual art in our pages. A Minority Report, the critic is rooted in a founding aspect of our mission and vision. What we've described variously as our commitment to religious humanism or incarnational humanism. This conviction, the critics argue, should find expression in a celebration of art that honors and attends to the mystery of the human form. This is not, to its credit, an argument for realism or narrowly representationalist approaches. The critics are not vying to enshrine a particular style or school, but they argue visual art nourished by incarnational humanism will be figural, enchanted by the human body. As our pages have made more and more room for abstraction and conceptual art, the critics worry that our commitment to humanism is waning. I understand the concern, even if I think it's mistaken, but I have little energy for polemics. Don't expect a defense. I am, in my creeping old age, a lumper rather than a splitter. I am not here to make a disjunctive case for this rather than that, or only this. I am a practitioner of conjunction, also this, and including that. Let many flowers bloom. I agree that our incarnational humanism should find expression in the commitment to art that grapples with and honors our embodiment. My only retort to the critics is simply this. Picturing bodies is not the only way to take the body seriously in art. Indeed, even the most abstract and conceptual art can bear the imprints of the human body in ways that are tactile, haptic, visceral, and incarnate. No one has taught me more about this than poet and essayist Molly McCulley Brown. In her stunning collection of essays, Places I've Taken My Body, Brown's voice bears the marks of her own embodiment as she navigates a world that isn't primed to welcome somebody with cerebral palsy. Surprisingly, at times, Brown's own body is the focus, the subject matter, but I would argue that Brown's body is present in her voice. That voice, attentive and incisive, at once warm, wittingly, and searingly honest, emerges from a body that is bent and refuses to bend in ways I'll never experience. And yet the magic of Brown's pose obliquely testifies to the particularity, the hawk-est, if you will, of her embodiment. Sometimes the body appears as witness rather than subject. When Brown recounts her journey into Roman Catholicism, there is a record scratch encounter between her aspirations and her embodiment. Quote, "I can't enact many of the gestures the Catholic Mass requires," unquote. This generates an existential question. Quote, "Is it absurd to adhere to a religion whose central rituals my body won't let me perform?" Unquote. But this same faith, she realizes, accords centrality of the suffering body of Christ. While listening to a homily one week, she glimpses afresh, quote, "the bent body of Christ on the cross," unquote. And then the stained glass window above the pictures, a lamb with curled legs. A flash of recognition, a new perceptual possibility. Bent body, lamb. Bent body, lamb. Bent body, lamb. Her prose chant, which then becomes a prayer with a question mark, like so many. Maybe I don't have to hate my body. Brown refuses to romanticize. The honesty of her voice, willing to waver, is a defining feature. "The truth is," she later writes, "mostly I don't want a different life or even a different body." She reaches a, quote, "brokered peace," unquote. Quote, "this body, as complicated as it is, gave me rapt attention. It gave me empathy and maturity. It gave me discipline and poetry, and enough hurt and strangeness to need it." The body that gives poetry. The body that picks up the brush or tackles the clay or sets its hand to write a poem. If at Image Journal our imagination is nourished by God incarnate, we are also nourished by a body given. The art we curate and celebrate in our pages is art that takes the human body seriously, even if it is not always pictured. Maybe especially as art that bears the marks of bodies bent, but creative, wounded, yet making. And so, now when I hear from these critics, I think of Gego's hands. On those upper echelons of the rotunda ramp, closer to the light streaming through the oculus, I'm looking at her tejederas. They are smaller, lighter, scaled to what her ailing hands could accomplish, and yet they are audacious and unanticipated. These hands have a memory. Every once in a while, the echoes of her sprawling reticulares are manifest in these weavings. But this is not nostalgia for what she used to be able to do. Gego is showing us how her newest work rhymes with what she's been doing all her life. "The tejederas," Tanya Barson comments, "are the final expression of what Gego called the multidimensional chess game, which she played throughout her life as an artist. The hands that could bend all that wire and weld that iron and grapple with gravity in hanging those installations are the hands that now weave fabric and paper, still playing with the dynamics of hiddenness and revelation. Here, too, in the abstraction of these singular weavings, is the body, beautiful if bent, bending what it can to continue the endless endeavor of measuring infinity." And that essay was by James K.A. Smith, the editor-in-chief of Image Journal at imagejournal.org. That editorial is called "Gego's Hands, Valuing the Body in Art." There was something very touching and beautiful about that, and I wanted to share it with you. Another thing that might be coming up is a big announcement about a future project. I hope to give you something official by next week, but I am in some negotiations right now for that, that are getting very exciting. I hope to give you some good news by next week. If you'd like to be up on the latest news, being a supporter is a great way to do that. When you contribute $1 a month at patreon.com/sparkmymuse, or you contribute at the Substack that I have, you subscribe there, or just a one-time gift once in a while, you get on a list where I will update you on all that's happening and all the exciting news that's coming. If you enjoy Spark My Muse and its many iterations, there's always a variety of things happening, a variety of authors being interviewed and things happening. Share it with your friends and share it with your family. I always appreciate that so much. And I also enjoy when people reach out and tell me what they enjoyed or tell me something insightful that they learned. I never know whose ears hear these episodes and what sort of impact they ever make unless somebody reaches out and lets me know. I wish you God's blessing and peace until we meet again. Thank you.